And joining me now in the KRVS studios is Sam Irwin. He is the former press secretary of the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. He's also a graduate of USL back then, and he is now a freelance photojournalist living in Baton Rouge. He's originally from Breaux Bridge and has just recently published a book called Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. And there's a foreword by Marcel Bienvenue, who many of our listeners know as a great collector of recipes and just knows so much about food in Louisiana. So a really good person to have with you working on this book. So, of course, being from Breaux Bridge, Sam, it's a great pedigree to have when you're going to write about crawfish.
Well, yes, I suppose it was something that being from Breaux Bridge doesn't just make you an expert on crawfish, but I was raised in the crawfish industry. My grandfather was one of the pioneers in the business in Henderson.
So it's something you just grew up with, and I'm sure you, when they started the crawfish festival, you may have gone to the first crawfish festival.
My family wasn't quite in Breaux Bridge in 1959 and 60. My father was in the Navy, but when they came back and settled in Breaux Bridge, both of my parents were heavily involved in the Crawfish Festival Association. And recently I spoke to the Public Relations Association of Louisiana in Baton Rouge, and my mom came to that presentation, and I asked everyone I said, who's been to the Crawfish Festival? And people raised their hands. And I said, who's been to the Crawfish Festival when it was wild and crazy? And a few raised their hands. And then I said, well, here's my mother. She's one of the people responsible for making it wild and crazy. She's 84
sure, she loved
now.
That.
Yes.
Well, let's go back and talk about your grandfather who was in that industry. Tell us about him. What was his name?
My grandfather was Joe Ami. Mm-hmm. If you spell it out, it looks like Amy, but right. En français, Ami. And his father and my grandfather, my great-grandfather and my grandfather, they first started in Butte La Rose, and they were in the fish-buying business. And this is in the 1920s, and refrigeration was an issue, but there was a railroad that crossed the Atchafalaya that went to Lafayette and beyond and to Baton Rouge and beyond. And so there was a market that was created near the railroad tracks, and the Atchafalaya was a fantastic source of the commercial species of fish, catfish, gaspergoo, buffalo. And so my grandfather and my great-grandfather set up a fish-buying business there.
And so they knew all of the fishermen, the people who caught those kinds of fish you mentioned, and who also caught crawfish in the basin.
Well, probably so. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing was the fish industry at the beginning. I mean, that was where that was the commercial. You could sell fish and apparently make a living. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could have sold crawfish
back
and made
then,
a living.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a different – but describe that. What did people do with crawfish, or how did they use crawfish back then when your grandfather and great-grandfather were working in the basin?
Well, I think it was essentially just locally consumed. You caught crawfish.
And very seasonal.
And seasonal. But I think where it really the impetus for the crawfish industry, some of it – there's a lot of credit for New Orleans. Residents in New Orleans like crawfish. There's plenty of documentation from the 20s, from the Picayune, and from other sources, a Works Progress Administration cookbook. They talked about folks in New Orleans catching crawfish in their backyards in the area of the lakefront and off of Orleans Avenue, about two blocks off of Orleans Avenue. Apparently, that was a nice wet area that when the water would come up, the crawfish would present themselves in the ditches, in the little sloughs, in the ponds. And when it was crawfish season, you just sent your kids out in the backyard and they caught some crawfish.
Caught enough for a meal.
But they decided they wanted houses along the lakefront. So they started building houses. So what happens? That doesn't make good habitat for crawfish. Mm-hmm. So the crawfish went away from New Orleans, but the people still wanted to have some crawfish. And so they started looking for a supply of crawfish, and some of that came from the Pierre Part area, and crawfish was still supplied to New Orleans. And we're talking live crawfish, but Also, if you wanted to impress guests, you served a crawfish bisque in your house, which takes a lot of preparation.
People find that very interesting. I mean, of course, we know people like in New Orleans like to eat it, but I think very few people are aware of that history of it, that people used to actually catch it personally, domestically around New Orleans.
I was surprised to see that because, you know, New Orleans obviously is the biggest market in the state. So it seems as though that's where people would go to sell crawfish. Mm-hmm. But some of the Percy Viasca, who was a biologist, who was he did a study of crawfish, and the person who was, I guess, the head of that version, the 1920s version of the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission. There was a big article in Times-Picayune, I think it was in 1922, and the Wildlife and Fisheries fellow says there's no need. We can farm crawfish if we want to, but there's no need unless every pond and lake is drained. But we'll be able to farm them, but don't worry. But it was precognizant that they figured we could grow crawfish, but it only took about, 60 years before we started looking at less farm crawfish.
Right. So he didn't really have a complete vision of how much we would want to consume crawfish several decades later. Well, so when did you decide you wanted to write a book about crawfish? How long have you been thinking about that?
Well, as you know, I'm a journalist. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of freelance writing and I do a lot of write a lot of fiction. So I like to think of myself as a writer. And, of course, every writer wants to have a book. And I wasn't necessarily thinking about writing a book about crawfish, but a nonfiction book, you have to be expert in a field. You wouldn't want a guy that grew up in Brobridge to be writing a book about nuclear physics unless he was a nuclear physicist, right?
There probably is one there.
That's not his platform.
So you figured you had to do some research then.
Oh, I did. Mm-hmm. I did. But then History Press, the publishers, they are a small press out of Charleston, South Carolina. They called me up and said, we like your website. We've seen your website. We've seen your writing. Do you have a book for us? And, we chatted. We discussed a few things, and they liked my proposal about crawfish. And they said, okay, we want it, write it. And they ordered a book, I guess sort of like ordering a plate of boiled crawfish. They ordered a book in November, and by the following October, it was ready.
So you did a lot of work.
I did. I did. The part of it, I wanted it to come out in time for Mardi Gras when, it's kind of the beginning of the crawfish season.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. Books, there's a real market for books on sort of single ingredient nonfiction books.
Sure.
Over the past, I guess, 10, 20 years, there have been some very, very famous books about things like salt, cod, longitude.
Yes, sure.
You know, someone takes a topic like that and just blows it up in the sense of there's so much involved, the history of it, the people involved, the connections, the connotations. So there's a lot. There's a complexity to a single subject like crawfish.
Well, I call it a small history. Mm-hmm, you know, History Press specializes in small histories, and that's – I don't know if anybody else uses that term, but
that's a nice term.
That's what I call them,
so
small histories.
How do you have this book set up? How did you structure your book on Louisiana crawfish?
Well, the first thing that I did was I started with what I knew. You know, I interviewed some of the people that helped promote the Crawfish Festival, and many of them are gone. But there's a few that are octogenarians, and I started interviewing them. And then through my connections with the Department of Agriculture and Forestry, I had some connections with the Crawfish Research and Promotion Board, and I interviewed some of the older people there. But interviews with older people can only take you so far, and then I put out a call through the media for folks to send in their crawfish stories, because everybody's got a crawfish story. You know, what's your favorite crawfish story? And folks contacted me and sent in some that were historically interesting, some that were just anecdotal, and some that were just downright funny.
So again, tell us how you decided to put this all together, the history of it, plus these stories that you were gathering.
Well, I knew New Orleans played a role. But to find that, I had to do a lot of research, and I'm so grateful to the people that scanned all of the Picayunes and Advocates, because those are all available online now. And I think I had a source. And today's historian has a source that's digitized that might not have been available to a less enterprising historian, say, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nobody wants to flip through 1,000 pages of newsprint. But due to the magic of science, you can do
– you can put in crawfish and
– you can search a digitized volume. So, I started with a premise that Cajuns brought popularized crawfish to the rest of Louisiana. And that theory – Cajuns and the the French speakers, the ones that wouldn't necessarily say they're French, they might would say – call themselves Creole French. But that theory pretty much held up. And then a popular – I'm going to call it an old wives' tale. People said, we're embarrassed to eat crawfish. That was something I questioned. And in the chapter, When Life Gives You Crawfish, Make Etouffee, I wrote about that. And I looked, and really the historical evidence that's out there in the newspapers, people, restaurants and folks that were entertaining, if you wanted to impress your guests, you serve crawfish. In 1932 – Evangeline, the movie with Dolores del Rio, the actress, donated a statue of Evangeline. And Cousin Dud LeBlanc, I guess he might have been a state senator at that time. This was the equivalent of a Hollywood premiere, the unveiling of the Evangeline statue in St. Martinville. And so he invited dignitaries from Canada, from Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and also all of the state dignitaries here, and they unveiled the statue. They visited St. Martinville. They came to Brobridge, and they had a crawfish bisque served for 500 people on the banks of the Bayou Teche, right on the banks near St. Bernard Church.
So 1932, this was considered in many ways fine cuisine, something that you would serve to dignitaries coming from other places.
It was haute cuisine. Mm-hmm, and this constant mention in the papers from the 20s through all the way up until when crawfish kind of became a little more of a regular menu item in the 60s that this is the best place to go get crawfish bisque. We serve crawfish bisque. Monsieur Thibodeau and Madame Baudouin had a party on the banks of Bayou Lafourche, and a picnic, and they spent their times crawfishing, things like that. You know, there's all these little society mentions.
So early on, but you keep mentioning crawfish bisque. Was that how it was primarily eaten? Are those the references that you find in these earlier times in cookbooks and newspaper articles?
I think probably it was the only thing that you really needed a recipe for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, because Mrs. Eileen Champagne is credited with creating the dish crawfish etouffee, and it's butter and onions. And crawfish.
And about what year did that start
surfacing?
Oh, that's
1952 or so. And at the Rendezvous Club in Brobridge. And but somebody would have discovered, hey, you take some crawfish tails and sauté them and fat and some onions, and you sauté it in butter, and that tastes pretty good. I think somebody would have developed that.
So people might have been doing it before, but that's really the first reference to etouffee in a public place and a recipe that's public.
It's interesting that's how she liked to eat it, because most people wanted it in a thick crawfish stew recipe, or maybe they even ground it up and sort of made a crawfish patty with it. But this is the way she wanted it. And some of her friends came in and said, "What, Eileen, what are you eating?" And she said, "You know, I've smothered some crawfish. J'ai étouffé des écrevisses." And they said, "Oh, it tastes so good. You should serve this on your menu." But Dickie Bro, who owns Café des Amis in Brobridge, he told me that Mrs. Charles Hébert in the 20s and 30s had a hotel in Brobridge, probably a boarding house type situation, and she served what was a they didn't call it crawfish étouffée.
But it was a smothered crawfish dish.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But when the hotel went away, the recipe kind of disappeared for a while, and then Mrs. Champagne resurrected it and put it, and then folks said, "What are we going to call it?" And they agreed on it. Was sort of a little committee, like the Martin Begna, who was the bank president at Farmers Merchant, and his wife. They came in and they said, "Let's call it étouffée."
We could call a lot of things étouffée in Louisiana. we like smothering things.
Yeah, with onions and butter. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong.
So the 20s is kind of the earliest reference you have to this dish.
I think so, mm-hmm. because probably some rudimentary refrigeration was coming available. Rudimentary transportation was coming available. Mm-hmm. And then New Orleans was expanding, and as they dried up their wet neighborhoods.
They couldn't catch crawfish anymore.
Yeah, so they were looking for crawfish.
To turn north. Well, give us a sense, for those people listening who don't have a sense of those original, and you're mentioning, you know, the wet backgrounds, backyards of New Orleans. But when you talk about the crawfish industry, the crawfish early on, where were you talking about? You mentioned the basin. Where were people primarily catching crawfish?
Well, Brobridge capitalized on the burgeoning popularity of the crawfish when it held its centennial celebration of its incorporation in 1959. But the crawfish were coming from basin communities like Henderson, Catahoula, Cota Homes, Catahoula, Pierre Part, Bayou Pigeon, Bayou Sorrel, and around and there. And so the crawfish that were caught on the eastern side of the basin, say Pierre Part and Bayou Sorrel and Pigeon, that market, they kind of had New Orleans as a market. And then interestingly enough, with the rise of refrigeration, and they built the levee, the barrier levees that – in Henderson, and then they just created this perfect environment for boating and fishing, and then the outboard motor became popular, and Lafayette is a fairly large community, and post-war people began to be have better job, better income. They started buying boats, going fishing, and so you're in Henderson, and you wanted to spend the weekend, so you built a little camp, and then it was a community. Then there were honky-tonks, and the honky-tonks all kind of serve short-order stuff. And so
the industry grew.
Crawfish was one of the things that when they came online, you know, when they were available, they tasted really good. And folks from Lafayette said, "Oh, man, these crawfish are really good." Mm-hmm. Places like Pat Huval, he bought Henry Guidry's former honky tonk dance hall, and then he abandoned the honky tonk atmosphere and just went straight restaurant, like around 52, somewhere right in there. And then Robin's restaurant, and it wasn't Robin's restaurant. Robin's was simply kind of another honky tonk.
Mm-hmm. So you're describing kind of a it's an interesting little history there. It's post-World War II, and people are becoming a bit more prosperous and, as you said, getting boats, getting camps, going into those areas that were a little more isolated at some point.
Sure.
And experiencing more crawfish and different kinds of dishes and really having an interest in bringing that back to their communities.
Well, the industry really developed when restaurants started serving, had a good source of a reliable peeled crawfish meat product, tail meat product.
So the refrigeration also is very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then people were still maybe – the crawfish industry also coincides with the rise of the oil industry. And a lot of as the Cajuns would call them, Americans, you know, outsiders, English speakers came in, and they didn't have a tradition of eating crawfish. Now, the French always had a tradition of eating crawfish from Europe to Canada to Louisiana. The English didn't. And they were probably a little bit leery of eating crawfish. And they didn't – apparently never saw the clear water of the Atchafalaya Basin that you could catch it, or the pond culture where you could catch crawfish.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell people who are just tuning in and finding this succulent, as you the title of your book says. My guest is Sam Irwin, who is now a freelance photojournalist living in Baton Rouge. He has just published a book. It's called Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. And we're talking about some of the things he did to find out about the history of the crawfish in Louisiana. But you said you collected a lot of stories from people. You kind of put the word out and said, give me your best stories about crawfish. And do you have some favorites that people sent in? And
my, my most favorite, and I put it in the book, was Mr. James Daigle from Eunice. I'm not sure how old Mr. Daigle is. He's older than me. I think he mentioned growing up in Eunice. Of course, Catholics in Louisiana know how important it was to go to Mass on Sunday morning, even if you went to Holly Beach. You still had to – and spent the weekend at a camp in Holly Beach or south of – in Hackberry or wherever. You still made sure you went to Mass. And so he said his parents were going to visit relatives south of Lake Charles. And it was gravel roads the whole way. And he and his parents and his young sister about his age, they drove there. And Mama bought a new dress, brand new dress, so she could – I guess, show off a little bit in church, you know, with her new dress. And everything was basically uneventful until the ride home. Now, I've heard the story of crawfish migrations where crawfish leave one body of water and cross the road to maybe go find better water, more food or something. And I've heard that. I've never witnessed it. But Mr. Daigle said as they were driving home on a road, I believe he called it Pine Prairie Road, that they came across a crawfish migration. Well, his father, like good Cajuns, is prepared for anything. And he had a sack in the back that he would put fish in. Well, he and his son got the sack out. They went out on the road by the lights of the headlight. They started picking up the crawfish and filled up that sack. So they had a nice sack of live crawfish. And I keep trying to put myself in the head of Mr. Daigle's father. And I can just imagine that he looked at those thousands of crawfish crossing the road just there for the taking. And he looked at his one sack of crawfish and he said, we need more. We need more crawfish.
We need another sack made out of cloth.
And he found one. He had one. Mrs. Daigle's new dress served nicely. He just took her dress, her brand new dress that she had worn to church that morning, tied off the armholes and the neck holes, and proceeded to fill up her new dress with live crawfish.
With her permission.
I don't think it was with her permission. Mr. Daigle said that he and his sister sat in silence the rest of the trip back while Mom had a few choice words. But all's well that ends well, because she bought a new dress by the end of that week.
Because could have sold the crawfish. But what an amazing image. I didn't know that they migrated like that. What an incredible opportunity to see thousands of crawfish crossing a road.
And there's several references in the newspapers. One of the earliest ones is, I think, 1932. And a lot of times it happened on Highway 61 near Gramercy. And I think probably building Highway 61, you know, the airline highway, probably interrupted the regular flow of the water, you know, because everything wants to flow south. And there were two or three migrations that were reported in the newspapers right around Gramercy. And it made all of the papers, not just Louisiana, but, you know, I'm finding...
Well, I can imagine. That's an amazing story. I've never heard of that. Do the migrations happen anymore?
No, those crawfish are too valuable. We keep good oxygen in the water and we give
them... So they don't have to search out other bodies
exactly,
of water.
Exactly.
They're content rather than restless crawfish. So we no longer see those migrations. But that would have been great if someone had taken some kind of home movie of one of those migrations.
Oh, that would... you know, and I've always heard it and I wasn't sure if I believed it because...
Well, that story obviously
is true.
But
then I found documentation.
Mm-hmm. So your book is full of stories like that, personal stories that people have of how they or their families interacted with crawfish.
Well, I am a graduate of USL's UL's history department. And Dr. Amos Simpson, Richard Cusimano, Hal Peterson, Gloria Fierro, Jim Dorman, John Cameron, they all taught me you've got to – if you say it in the book, you got to have a reference. And so I learned quite a bit of how to do history. And I finally realized what they were trying to teach me when I wrote this book. And so there's a lot of factual information. And there are several themes that had to happen. First, there had to be a market. Then they had to have the transportation grid. Then they had to have refrigeration. But the basin crawfish was a great natural place to catch crawfish, but it wasn't reliable. Mm-hmm. You can't control those conditions. You know, you have an aquarium at home and your goldfish do well, but if you change the environment,
that's right.
Something bad
so
can happen to your goldfish.
So that next step of the whole industry where they controlled the environment. And
exactly.
So do you go into that part of the history in your book as
well? Yes, that's a major part.
Yes.
That's probably where the where the growth of the industry was most significant. And it's interesting in that in 1966, LSU hired an aquaculture professor. Most of the aquaculture research had been done at Auburn University. And they hired Dr. Jim Avalt to come in and head the burgeoning LSU aquaculture research. But everybody in 1966 thought it was going to be catfish ponds.
And not crawfish.
And not crawfish, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were all ready to do catfish. And Dr. Avalt would go to speak at this group, and they would say, well, what are you going to work on? And he said, well, we're doing this, but I'm interested in doing some crawfish research. And people would invariably yell out, why do you want to do that? All you have to do is go scoop them out of the ditches.
Little did they know the demand that there would be. And again, I want to mention that we're talking about the book Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. My guest, Sam Irwin, a UL graduate from these amazing professors that he mentioned, all classic history professors here at UL, USL back then. He is now a photojournalist, freelance photojournalist living in Baton Rouge, but is originally from Brobridge, the crawfish capital of the world, and has just published this book. I know people... one question they will have is, are there recipes in the book?
Yes, there are recipes. And I would have put more recipes, but I had a word limit.
And you had to get the history in there as well.
And I had to tell the whole story.
Maybe the next book.
But I do have Mrs. Champagne's original crawfish etouffee recipe.
Okay, the original crawfish etouffee recipe. And that's the one from the 20s or the 50s?
The one from the 50s.
The 50s, yeah. Okay. The other one probably wasn't written down and just... word of mouth. How can you get a copy of the book?
Well, as I like to say, it's available in the better
everywhere.
The better bookstores and bait shops.
Bait shops.
You know, it's in the big everywhere. Booksellers.
Right.
It's with the big online retailers.
And people are so good at searching that out. So
yeah.
The title
yeah.
again is Louisiana Crawfish, A Succulent History of the Cajun Crustacean. My guest, Sam Irwin, is the author. And I know people will be looking forward to that second edition with more recipes. Thank you so much for coming to share your book with us
today.
Thank
you. I enjoyed talking with you.